As I was looking over my lesson, it seemed like it's been a long time ago since we were looking into the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew. So if you have that chapter with you, it is my belief, and I believe the Bible makes that very plain in this chapter, that the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew is the foretelling by Jesus of the destruction of Jerusalem, as occurred in AD 70. Now, I want to emphasize again what I have said throughout this study, that there are many views of the book of Revelation, but only two that I believe are consistent with anything that the Bible teaches. There are those who believe that the book of Revelation was written somewhere around 90 or the early 90s and was a prediction by John of the fall of the Roman Empire. If that is your belief, I don't have a problem with that. I believe the things that we have talked about, such as are talked about in Zechariah 14, what we're looking about in Matthew chapter 24, and all the things that fit together in this book as we'll go through it, have led me to the conclusion that he's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and its fall in AD 70. Therefore, the writing of the book is placed somewhere in the 60s as John was on the Isle of Patmos. Now, with that said, what I'm asking you to do, when I said when we finish the 24th chapter, we'll spend a week or two on questions if you want to, I'm asking you now to start writing down your questions. And I would appreciate it if you'll start giving them to me. And the reason for that is this. How do I say this to all of us? You know what happens when we start asking questions from the floor a lot, right? This question, somebody says, well, what about this? And the next thing you know, we've taken up the whole class period on what started out as one question. And so I would like to give everybody the opportunity to have as many of their questions answered as possible, and I would like to be as prepared as possible. So if you can give me those in written form, you can hand them to me. I'll start checking the question box in the back. So any way you want to do it, just do your best to get them to me as soon as possible, and we'll go from there. If I have marked correctly, I want to back up just a little bit. In verses 15 through 18 of this chapter, we had talked about this a little bit. Notice that the Bible says those that are in Judea need to flee when they see these signs coming. This is more of the reason for what I just said. I believe this is about the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, and references like this to Judaism, to Jerusalem, are the things that make me more of that persuasion than any other interpretation that I have seen. So here he's telling us that a time is coming when they were to flee from the city and to get out. And as we have noticed earlier, the Christians were blessed with the privilege to get out of the city of Jerusalem. When the siege was laid against the city, and then it was withdrawn by the Roman army, all of the Christians, as far as we know, got out of Jerusalem and the surrounding area and fled to the mountains, as they were told to do and was predicted by Daniel in Daniel chapter 9. Now, in verses 19 through 20, and woe unto them, as we talked about last time, that are with child, let your travel not be, pray that it not be in the winter. He is talking about events that would have pertained to the old Jewish law, that they were not to travel more than a certain distance on the Sabbath. And we know that in the wintertime, or any time, travel with ladies who were about to give birth would have been extremely difficult. So these are the things that he's talking about. And then when you see the signs, look in verse 23 through 28. Here he says, now, if any man begins to say to you, lo, there is Christ, or he's over here, and they just begin to hear these things put out, I'll preface this by, many of you will remember, let's say in the 40s and 50s, before I was born, right? But how many of you remember when you were young, how many different times you would hear somebody say, the end is coming, and people would go up on the mountain or they would go into some secluded place and wait for the Lord to come, and then they'd have to turn around and explain why what they had thought they had read in the book of Revelation was not true. This is not talking about the end of time. He's not predicting a time when these things will happen. But he is telling them that these things are going to happen to these people at this time in Judea and in Jerusalem. And he says false Christ will arise. And according to Josephus and Pliny, these did arise. And many were claiming to be Jesus. And here's what he's telling them. Let's just take the religious world in which we live today. Do you think today that many people are confused because of all the different teachings and philosophies that go on in the world today?
Yes.
Okay. So, how many of them claim to be from God?
All of them.
All of them. Okay? And they all claim to be teaching the truth. Okay? Now, as we noticed, there when things are diametrically opposed to each other, can they both be true?
No.
Okay? So, here he says, there will be these rumors. They'll just go everywhere. Christ is out here. Christ is out here. Come see. And if the Jews, who are the Jewish Christians, who are in Jerusalem and Judea, had listened to those cries, he says, you would have gone out to see the false teachers, and you would have gotten distracted from what? From the warnings that you're being given to be ready when this end comes. Now, again, think about that today. Many people today get so fed up with all the different things they hear that many people say, I'm done. I'm just done with religion. Okay? What's the problem with that? They're going to have to answer one day to God for what they have done. But you can see how this would have been detrimental to the health of the Christians at this particular time, hearing all of these claims that Jesus is coming. He's out here, he's out there. And if you had gotten sidetracked into trying to chase down who the real one was, you would have lost your chance to escape from the destruction when Jerusalem fell. So, let's go now to verses 27 through 29. Philip, I'll let you read those verses for us. Or 27 and 28, I'm sorry.
27 and 28. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather.
All right. Now, once again, people that I know who believe in the idea of the thousand-year reign, they're telling us that the end is coming, and that's what he's talking about here. And how's it going to come?
Quick.
As the lightning comes from the west, you can see it go, or from the east, you can see it go to the west. It passes pretty fast, right? So he's saying, this thing is going to happen quickly. Now, what's going to happen when the Son of Man came, or is to come? Look at what he tells us there. What's going to happen? What did he say, Philip?
Are you talking about verse 29?
28?
28. Oh.
The eagles
It says in this translation, the vultures will gather.
Okay, the vultures will gather, and what will they eat?
The carcasses.
The carcasses. All right. Now remember, we talked about this last time. How many people is it reported died in the city of Jerusalem? 1,100,000. That's a lot of people. So much so that the Bible records for us, and so does our history records for us, that these carcasses caused the whole world to stink, or the whole area, and these were just piled one on top of another. Now, Jerusalem, if you'll remember, Solomon had created an underground waterway so they always had water. But those waterways had been stopped by the Roman army, and so they all set empty. And history records that all of those underground tunnels were just heaped with carcasses, so that they just kind of started from the bottom and built up and pretty much covered the whole town. I can't even fathom that, can you? I can't get that around my mind, what that must have been like at that time. But he says here, the vultures or the eagles will. Who was circling Jerusalem? Who was it that was?
Rome.
Rome was laying siege to the city. And in essence, feeding upon the misfortune of the Jewish people. Now, I can't even fathom. You know, we look around today. We have some terrible people in our world, right? A few years ago, we were chasing a man by the name of, was it Saddam Hussein? Why were people so upset with him?
He was responsible for the murder of a lot of people.
Did he seem to have no conscience? Can you imagine being one of those Roman soldiers and sitting there day after day for those 2 or 3 month period here and watching people starve to death, watching people devour their own babies when they were born, eating each other in packs? I don't care what kind of person you are. Watching that had to be tough. It had to make them think, why are we doing this? But he's saying here that this is what was happening, and that's what will happen when Jerusalem falls. All right? So the coming here refers to the coming of the Roman army that the Lord would send, and the Jewish nations would be the carcasses upon which they would feed. Now, we've already talked about how severe this suffering was. So let's go down to verse 29. All right, Philip, I'll let you read that for us.
Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken.
All right. What translation are you reading from?
NIV.
Okay.
Not my favorite, but that's the one that's in the pew.
Well, In one instance, it's very accurate. Okay. King James, in this verse, in the last part of it, will read like this at the end of it. The powers of heaven shall be shaken. And so the premillennialist jumps on that and says, see, he's talking about heaven. NIV says what? The heavenly bodies.
Right?
Yes, sir. All right, so look at this. Immediately after this tribulation, after the fall of Jerusalem, immediately after that, what's going to happen?
The darkening of the moon.
All right. The sun will be darkened, the moon will be darkened, right? All right. We'll get more into these signs later, but let me leave you with this thought on this. Heaven here refers, in my understanding, to the Roman Empire. They were the ultimate authority of the day. Under them was the power of Judaism. That was really the enemy of Christ that had caused them to hate Roman, the Roman Empire. So both of them were destroyed. Okay? I asked you this question before. If you'd ever seen a snake swallow a catfish, have you ever seen that? He makes a terrible mistake. The old snake will swallow the catfish from the head first. And then all of a sudden, that snake, that catfish, will throw those fins out, and there they both lay. So, Rome decided that Jerusalem needed to be destroyed. And so she laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. But in destroying Jerusalem, she would intensify the wars and the rumors of wars we'll talk about in a minute that would happen within the Roman Empire. And also, what did Rome hate the most?
Christianity.
What did Jerusalem hate the most?
Christianity.
Okay, Judaism hated Christianity. And in this dual destruction, they both will lay the way to a brighter day for the church. So after this immediate desolation, what will come? These powers will be shaken. The siege actually started, according to history, in August the 17th of AD 70. Okay? The first siege had taken place. Do y'all remember when Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Jerusalem and destroyed the temple? 600 years before the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, the destruction of Jerusalem had taken place under the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar. So, this reminds me, and I want to point this out. You remember Satan, we talked about this before, being the force behind the crucifixion of Jesus. You think Satan thought he was winning a great battle when he had Jesus crucified? Okay. Just like Rome thought, we're going to put down these uprisings when we abolish Jerusalem. Jerusalem thought if they could get Jesus crucified, they would win the victory. And it backfired on both of them. And both of them then became less the powers that they had been. Judaism was never again a strong force in the world and was not an enemy of Christianity after that. So, the signs of heaven, the heavenly beings, the heavenly bodies, the darkening of the sun, the falling of the stars, this refers to Judaism, the temple, the Sanhedrin rule and so forth that came crushing down or came crashing down when they were when this was destroyed. Now let's go to verse 30. Somebody read that verse for us.
And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory.
All right. Now remember this. Very interesting how this is wording. Did Jesus come to Jerusalem? Did he visit Jerusalem at the destruction of it? That's a yes or no question. We'll ask again. Don't answer now what I didn't ask. We'll ask that question next, Mickey. First question. Did Jesus come in the destruction of Jerusalem?
Yes.
Yes. All right, Mickey. Where did he come?
On the clouds.
in the clouds. He never set foot literally upon the city of Jerusalem. Never said he would. Okay, now, what's important about that?
Because people want to say that Christ is coming back to this earth and set up an earthly kingdom and reign for 1,000 years to give everybody a second chance.
Okay. So, we're going to cover this again. Nowhere in the Bible do you read the word rapture. Right?
Right.
It's not there. No such thing as a second chance, Hebrews 9:27. Okay? So, when he says here that the Son of Man shall come in the clouds, what do you mean by that? Well, I'm going to ask a second question with that for you to preface it. Has the Lord ever come in a cloud before?
Yeah. He did in the leading the Jews out of Egypt.
When they were coming out through the wilderness, headed to the promised land. So this isn't strange language. This isn't something, oh, this has never happened before. He's only telling us, now, RB said I wasn't to mention him in my sermons anymore, so I'll just ask him a question. Do you think Jesus could have literally been seen in those mountains in the or in the clouds in the Old Testament, RB?
I don't think he, no. No man's, I don't think they could literally see him. They could see his persona, maybe his embodiment, maybe.
Okay. What was the real important thing for them to see?
That he was there.
His power.
Yeah, his power.
His guidance. His keeping, his protection. He was with them. Did they know that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, at that time, if you remember, he was in two things. Right? What was he in? A pillar of fire by day or night and a cloud by day, right? Okay. Was the Lord present in both of those?
Yes.
Yes. Symbolically, his power was there. Mickey?
Well, I've got a question. You know, you're talking about them coming out of Egypt and all. Well, when Moses parted the sea, wasn't his power there?
I'll answer that later. Yes. All right. So, notice what he says. When this comes, the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, then shall all tribes of the earth mourn. Look at that word. What's the word? T-R-I-B-E-S. All right. Do you think that I was wrong when I started trying to teach y'all when I first came here that God doesn't do anything by accident? Was I wrong when I said that?
Yeah.
All right. So, Philip, in all of your infinite wisdom, did the Gentiles of old have tribes?
I believe they did.
No.
So much for the infinite wisdom.
I was trying to make you look good. All right. Think about this. When did we first read of tribes in the Bible? Exactly. Okay. All other nations, Egypt, read of tribes there? No, they had a king, didn't they? Okay. Look at any other. Babylon? The Medes and the Persians? No. The Jews were unique in being divided into tribes, being the head of those 12 different tribes. So when he says, look at what he tells us. What's going to happen? And all the tribes of the earth will mourn. When?
When they see the Son of Man come.
When they see that destruction come. Now, who were the tribes?
Jews.
Jews. Why would the Jews mourn? But there would be no more Jerusalem. That came out. There would be no more Jerusalem. There would be no more temple. And why was that important to the Jews?
That's what God said.
That's where he had said his name. Okay? Now, who's suffering in this destruction?
Jews.
Jewish people. All right. So Jews from all nations of the earth. Were they discussed in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost? Yes. Were there Jews in every nation under heaven? Yes. Can you imagine the mourning that Jewish people did when they saw Jerusalem destroyed? No. That would be paramount. Just think about it for a minute. How many Americans today live overseas? A lot. Okay. But let's just suppose for a minute that you were an American citizen living in a foreign country and Washington, D.C. was bombed and destroyed. Do you think America, I don't care about your politics right now, but do you think you would mourn?
Yes.
Sure.
Why?
It's our country.
And with it, would go the freedoms, the protections that our nation affords under the system that we have. So, when Jerusalem was destroyed, Roman people throughout, or Jewish people throughout the world mourned because Jerusalem was destroyed, and this was the main thing. All right? I'm pausing a little bit because I'm trying to leave out some of the non-essentials so we can finish this tonight. Let's go to verse 31. Somebody read that for us.
And he will send his angels with a great sound of trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other.
Now I know he's talking about the end of time, right?
Yeah.
Wrong. All right. If I haven't, I wish I had time. So many times when I'm teaching this, especially this book, I want to stop and have another lesson or two on something else. But we're going to cover this real quickly. Do you think there's a lot of misunderstanding among religious people today about angels?
Yes.
Hmm?
Even in the church.
Huh?
Even in the church.
All right. Angels. What are angels?
Messengers.
Now, and I said this several times. If you ever, and I think you can get it on your phone now. But if you look in the internet, you look under Strong's, especially Strong's, because it has a good lexicon approach to it. You look up the word angel, and you look up the word messenger. It will give you the Greek and the Hebrew words that are translated angel and messenger in both the Old and the New Testament. And guess what you're going to find?
Same word.
Same word. The only reason our English Bible renders any of those translations angel is because the people who translated it thought, oh, this must be a divine being. And those who rendered it messenger said, this must be an earthly being. Now, question. You understand the problem they had when in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, who came to see Abraham?
Angel of the Lord.
He looked up and he saw, first he said he saw what? Y'all remember? Three men coming. Right?
Are you talking about when he's before Lot?
No, I'm talking about before the announcement of the birth of Isaac. Remember? When the Lord told Sarah she'd have a child? Well, Abraham? You're right. Elby, you're right. What did I say?
You said Elby.
Is this the one he wrestled with?
No, that's Jacob.
Okay.
I'm talking about when they came to Abraham, Three men they saw. Later we'll in other places in the same text. This is Genesis, 12 or 15 through 18, along in there. And then he will talk about three angels. Then he will say, if you remember, and the Lord stood behind and talked to Abraham. And the other two men went down to Sodom and Gomorrah. That's where they met Lot, right? And Lot took them in as angels, messengers from God. But the people in Sodom and Gomorrah recognized them as what?
Men.
Men.
Yeah, men, strangers.
And wanted to do all kinds of horrible things to them. So the fact that the Bible uses these two words is often confusing to people. Why do you think people want to be so fascinated with angels?
Mysterious divine connection to God.
And we can deal with those beings that float around through walls and do all these strange things, right? Same reason some people still like to hold on to the old description, Holy Ghost, as opposed to Holy Spirit. All right, so here he says, the angels shall gather, there a great sound and the sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect. Okay, here's what he's talking about. When Rome was weakened because of its oppression of the other nations, when Jerusalem fell and Judaism ceased to be a power, this gave the church the opportunity to truly proclaim the gospel without persecution. Okay? Have you ever heard it said today that we would do a better job of evangelism if we were persecuted? Well, the truth is, we would do a better job of evangelism if we were all converted. That's the key. It's not whether you fear for your life. It's none of those things. All right? It's whether we're converted to the Lord. But here, the word sounded out. Now, think about this. The Christians have been undergoing this persecution. God has even spared them from the destruction of Jerusalem. Do you think all of a sudden now people would listen to Christians? Yeah, God took care of you. I understand that. I can see how he spared y'all, as the Bible talked about through the signs of the Old Testament. So, here's what's going to happen. The church is going to explode. And it did. Now, not all of it was good, but it exploded. To the point that what eventually would happen to Christianity?
Be spread to all the earth.
But it would become the state religion. Right?
Rome, yeah.
Who announced that Christianity was the official religion of Rome?
Constantine.
Okay? So it spread. Now, as always happens, it seems with humans, once we start something good, we don't know when to quit. So it went in the wrong direction after a while. Okay? But what a marvelous thing happened here. All right, somebody look in verses 32 and 33. Somebody read 32 and 33.
Thou learnest this parable from the fig tree. When its branches has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the doors.
All right. So you see what Jesus has done up to this point in Matthew 24? He's answering for them the question, what shall the signs be? And he says, when you see these signs that I've just covered with you, it's over. It's fixing to end. Somebody read Luke 21, 28 for us just right quick. Listen to what Luke says on this subject.
when these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads because your redemption is drawing near.
All right. Now, do you think sometimes, and I hate to do this, but it's the only way I know to make this clear to us. If something horrible like the destruction of Washington, D.C. were to happen, would we be sad?
Yes.
Might we be devastated?
Yes.
Okay. But might it be, just might it be, that that would set Christians free to proclaim the good news to people who are now horrified, frightened, unsure of what's going to happen, so that they would return to that solid rock?
Yes.
Okay. That's what happened to these people. And that message went out, and people heard it, and they believed it, and they obeyed it, and they became Christians. All right?
We have something to compare this hypothetical thing to that you're talking about, and that was the attack September the 11th. The churches were full.
For 6 weeks, weren't they?
Yes.
I counted them.
Right.
6 weeks. Where I was, I think I told y'all, we had just merged two congregations together on August the 19th. We had gone from two congregations up around 100. And we had merged, and our attendance was running around 240, 250. 9/11 comes. We had people sitting in the aisles. We had 368 on the Sunday right after. We hit 400 the next Sunday. And then after about 6 weeks, we were back down in the twos. But yes, people respond. And what I kept trying to tell us was, we need to get busy right now, teaching these people every day, you know, all day long, what it means to be a Christian before they lose this interest they have. All right? It is near. Does not refer, again, to the end of time, but it refers to this, and I want you to notice this. Let them who are where? In Judea flee. I keep coming back to those expressions. Let them that are in Judea flee. These are the ones that this persecution was going to affect. They're the ones that were going to be bothered by this. All right. So let's go down to verse 34. We'll stop here. This is where we're going to end and start our study of something else. All right. Somebody read verse 34. And somebody, while you're doing that, turn to Luke 21. If you've already got that, Philip, hold it. Verse 34.
Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled.
All right. Who's he been talking to?
Jews.
Those in Judea and Jerusalem. Jews. Okay? And Jesus said, not H.L., not some preacher, these things shall come to pass when?
In this generation.
Okay. A Jewish time among Jewish people. All right? How many of them would be fulfilled?
All.
But my friends tell me, oh yes, indirectly, he referred to the destruction of Jerusalem, but the real message is the end of time. He gives us no indication. Because he said to that generation, all these things shall be fulfilled. Now, real quickly, let me highlight some things that are important about that. Number one, the Bible says there would never be anything like this, nor will there ever be anything like it again. Now, tell me, if you really believe that something as horrible as the destruction of Jerusalem was imminent, do you think people would have children?
Yeah.
If you had any sense, you wouldn't. You wouldn't want to bring a child into that, would you? So there is comfort to me, to my children, to my grandchildren, and generations unborn, that there will never be anything like this again. Now, somebody says, well, why would God do that? Has God ever done that before?
tomorrow.
What about the flood?
Destroyed the whole world with eight souls.
And he put a rainbow to say what?
I'll
never do that again. So it's not inconsistent for God to say, not ever going to do this again. This is it. This is the worst of it. Okay? Now, question. When you look at the world today, might we wonder if it would help if something like this happened again? Yeah. I hear people say that from time to time. Philip, read Luke 21, verse 31 and 32, would you?
All right. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that the kingdom of God is near. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened.
Now, I want to ask you as we close, does that make sense to you? As you look at this, aren't you glad? This is one of the things I take from this. I am so glad that God has always told us what's going on. When man fell in the garden, how long did it take God to offer him hope? Genesis 3, 15, right? The seed of woman's coming. Going to defeat Satan. Going to give you hope. The flood. What do you give them? A rainbow. In any time in history, when there has been a terrible disaster, God has always given man hope. We've got to do something with that thing. I'm going to turn it over on Rose in a minute. Go back and read the first part of Matthew 24 and realize that Jesus was asked more than one question by his disciples, right? He has answered one. When's it going to come to end? At the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay? But then they're going to ask him, when will the temple be destroyed? And he's going to answer another question for them. Who did Jesus want them to understand the temple was? This temple, he'll go on to say, will be destroyed in 3 days. But it'll be put back together. His disciples want to know, man, he's going to be able to rebuild Jerusalem in 3 days? No. But he's going to come out of the tomb in 3 days. So he has answered this question. And the end that he is talking about is the end of their enemy, which is Judaism. Now understand, where was Jesus when he made these statements to his disciples? They were already beginning to experience great persecution for believing in Christ, right? So they could see these signs beginning to happen. As they began to see Stephen, Peter, James the Less, were Christians being put to death for their faith? Yes. So he's telling them, these things are coming. Be ready. Now, we'll skip forward as we close. Is there an end time coming?
Yes. But no man knows. Not even Christ knew. He said only the Father.
Only his Father knows.
Well, it'll come when we all have flat roofs. Isn't that what they had? Don't come down from the housetop. Okay? We don't dwell in the housetops anymore. But the end is coming. What do we learn from this? God gave them warning of the physical destruction of Jerusalem that was coming. Has he given you and me any warning that he's coming?
Yes.
Yeah, it's in his book. Got it in his book.
Okay. So, You alone can answer this question as we close. How much time do you think the average Christian spends with his Bible? And I am sure glad most of y'all have a lot of Bibles, so that you've got that one you bring on Sunday morning, Wednesday night, and you don't ever have to take those papers out of them. Right? Do you think we study our Bibles enough?
No, not very much.
Why? Why? That's a question.
Lazy.
Is that the answer?
Too many
other
things.
Huh? No.
Busy with other things.
Yes.
I just want to ask you, do you ever think that we get caught into the trap that it's not going to happen while I'm alive? Hmm? And I got time to get my life wherever I need it to be. Now, we talked about this morning. If you're a Christian, it ought to be ready. Okay? But many people today will admit, look around you, right here in this congregation, on any, I'm not talking about people who are going on vacation or sick, but at any time we gather together, does the whole family gather? Why? People aren't convinced that he's coming. If he is, it's going to be so far off. And I got too many other things to get done before I get too worried about that or too concerned about that.
They don't know their Bible because it says in the hour when you least expect it is when it's going to happen.
And he's going to come as a thief in the night.
That's right.
And what do thieves come to do?
Steal.
What's he going to steal?
Your souls.
How do you balance those two? How do you balance his kindness, his mercy, his grace, full of all this tender mercy, and then all of a sudden God jumps up and says, you might ought to be just a little bit concerned if you're not living right. Well, I balance it this way. You ever had kids? What do you want for your kids?
Best.
The absolute best they can have. So what do?
Everything you can.
My baby girl, we had bought a place out in the country and I was building a house. And I had creeks through there and we'd built a pond. We had snakes everywhere. Well, my son and my oldest daughter, they came running and screamed, get up here now. So I wondered what it had done. So I climbed down and I came out of the house and I said, what's going on? And my daughter had a little stick. It was about 16 inches long. And they both were saying, Daddy, some snake. I said, what's going on? Well, Kaylee's poking the snake with the stick. Now, any of you know what a cotton mouth is? Well, this thing was about this long and about that big around. The only thing that saved that child was the snake was busy swallowing a rat. Okay? Now, what do you think I did? Somebody that know me. What do you think I did? I grabbed her up. And I didn't even think to say, oh, I'm glad he didn't bite you. I looked at her and I said, don't you ever, ever get close to one of those things again. He will bite you, make you sick, or kill you. Do you understand me? But, Daddy, I was just playing.
And you said, well, I'm not.
Now, don't we do that as parents? Don't we want our children to be afraid of the things that will hurt them?
Yes.
What kind of father would we have if he didn't warn us of the things that will bite us and destroy us? And that's the God we have. You have a song?
Yep.
So next Sunday, now, you better get your questions written out now. Mickey. And I will take those first that are written. If we have time before class is over to answer some off the cuff, so to say, I'll try to do that. But you understand how hard it is to answer some questions if you're not prepared. And we want to get us... How many of you have any, by the way? Y'all have any questions? If I've done such a good job, y'all have no questions over what we've covered. Did good with everybody but Mickey. Nobody else has questions.
Well, I'm still long-winded.
Y'all don't want Mickey to take up the whole class period, so give me some questions.